We're continuing this morning with our study in the book of John. And we are in John chapter 4. And I debated how to carve up chapter 5, because chapter 5 is way too long and there's way too much in it to do in one sitting. But yet, the last part of chapter 4 is something that stands apart from the rest of chapter 4. So I thought I would take the last part of chapter 4 and combine it with the first part of chapter 5. And we see some of the miracles that Yeshua did in the process of his ministry. By the way, this early part of Yeshua's ministry, and we're only a couple of months into his ministry, most likely the best chronology is that the apostles have not yet been called, so they are not following him around yet. We saw him calling some disciples in an earlier chapter, but there's no indication that they had this sort of permanent relationship or this close-knit relationship that they had later on in the Gospels where he was actually traveling with them. Chances are in this early part of John that Yeshua was traveling by himself. He was traveling alone and his disciples would kind of connect up with him and not. He was a teacher that would be traveling around and sometimes his disciples would be there and sometimes not. So we see in these two incidents here, we see Yeshua really acting on his own. He's saying, where are the disciples? And where are the apostles? The answers are that they hadn't really become established as the team that traveled with him quite yet. Also, if you look at kind of the chronology of the rest of the Gospels, John is writing of things that the other Gospels really didn't write about. I mean, this early ministry is something that doesn't really appear in detail in any of the Gospels. The other Gospels simply say that he traveled around Galilee, ministering in the synagogues and healing people. And so you don't get any details of exactly what happened until you look at the book of John and then you see some of the actual incidents that occurred when he was in this early ministry. Later on, it'll sync back up with the rest of the Gospels and some of the other events or some of the other timeline. But as of this point, it's all the stuff that's happening before him. Which would be logical because when you looked at the calling of the initial disciples, John was one of those early disciples. So John was a partaker of his early ministry, whereas some of the writers of the other Gospels were not. And they had contact with some of the apostles. I mean, there's some talk that some of the other Gospel writers had contact with Peter in writing out their description of what happened, or some of the other apostles that we really don't know about. But John was an eyewitness, and you see eyewitness sort of details come out. So in last week, we had Yeshua going from Judea to Galilee and then travel through Samaria. And rather than just zooming through like most of the Jews that they did, he stops outside of this town of Sychar and uses it as an opportunity to speak to this woman of Sychar. And he has great acceptance among the Samaritans. So they came out here. And bear in mind that Yeshua really didn't do any miracles in Samaria. And he told that woman stories about her life that probably went even beyond what is recorded. So he had miraculous knowledge. But in terms of doing something that was a sign miracle, healing someone or any water into wine or any of the other sign miracles that he'd done, he didn't do any of that. And yet they're in Samaria, but yet they all believe, or a great many of them believe, they came rushing out to him. Now he's coming back into Jewish territory. So he spent 2 days there, not because he didn't like the Samaritans, but because he had other places to go and things to do. He didn't intend to stay anywhere very, very long. He had a ministry to reach out to all those in Israel. And so he went on from Samaria to John chapter 4, verse 46. Therefore he came again to Cana of Galilee. He had made the water wine, and there was a royal official whose son was sick at Capernaum. Capernaum was about 15 miles away from home. And so, in their day, in our day, 15 miles is no big thing. We're probably about 8 or 9 miles away from my house, and it's no big deal. You get in the car, you drive for 15 miles, you go, you're there. And they have to walk. Even horses are very rare for common people to ride, even the military. Horses were more or less a war animal and not really used for even military people to ride around that much casually. So if the borough official is going to come from Capernaum to Galilee, you have to walk. And to walk 15 miles probably takes you all day. Get off and walk all the way to Cana because his son was sick. We don't know who this guy is, by the way. There have been some theories, and some people have gotten pretty, how should I say, pretty ardent in their support of their own pet theories of who this is. I mean, reading some of the commentaries, the people who've done some mental podium pounding as far as who they thought it was. There's mention in other places of scripture of the wife of Chuza, and the wife of Chuza was supporting Yeshua's ministry, and some people think this might have been Chuza who was actually coming to him to be healed. There's another man named Manaen who was listed in I think the book of Acts, who was Herod's adopted stepbrother or something along those lines. He was in a royal household of some sort. But we don't know. We don't know. It could have been those people. It could have been anybody. It could have been somebody whom whose name is not recorded anywhere in history. But he was somebody whose son was sick, and God put it in his head that he needed to go see Yeshua. Verse 47, when he heard that Yeshua had come out of Judea into Galilee, he went to him and was imploring him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. By the way, this is a unique incident to John. There are similar incidents in other places in Scripture, but there are enough details about those other incidences in the other Gospels that say they were separate incidences. This is something that is unique to John. The other Gospels just don't record this. So, the request was that Yeshua come to Capernaum to heal the son, which was a kind of a misunderstanding of who Yeshua was. Verse 48, so Yeshua said to him, unless you people see signs and wonders, you simply will not believe. In other words, you want me to come down there to work a miracle. The royal official said to him, sir, come down before my child dies. The royal official was insistent. Yeshua said to him, verse 50, go, your son lives. The man believed the word that Yeshua spoke to him and started off. He said to Mark, if you believe him. Yeshua basically said, I need to come down. He's fixed. He's good. Go home. And that was it. No flashes of light, no booms from heaven, none of the things, no special effects that we value in our time and our culture. He just simply said, okay, he's healed. Go home. He's healed. And the man believed him. I mean, no incantations, no crucifix. Go on back. He's done. Verse 51, as he was now going down, his slaves met him, saying in the summer. So he inquired of them the hour when he began to get better. Then they said to him, yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at that hour in which Yeshua said to him, your son lives. And he himself believed in his whole household. This is again a second sign that Yeshua performed when he had come out of Judea into Galilee. So I understand. I think it was Edersheim that I was reading brought out this point. It was one of the commentators that I read. That this man, the nobleman, not only had a problem that he came to Yeshua with, but he had a solution that he came to Yeshua with. I hate that. Come to him with a problem, and let him come up with a solution. The solution is often something that he never would have imagined. And so too with this man. The solution was nothing he imagined. He was limiting God's power and Yeshua's power, because he was expecting Yeshua to come down, lay his hands on the man, say some prayers, who knows what, and the man was going to be healed. And that was kind of what got stuck in his mind, so he stopped asking for his son being healed, and he started asking for Yeshua to come down and heal him. And basically through Yeshua, God's answer was, don't have to come down, I can do it from here, 15 miles away, okay, he's healed. That the power of God is just simply absolute. And we want a show. We don't just want a healing. We want a healing and a show. But God gave him what he needed for the healing of his son. And he did it in such a way that just knocked the man's socks off. And it wasn't the case that Yeshua was reporting to him something that already happened. Yeshua was actually healing him. I mean, that is the intent of the text. That the son was on the point of death. He had a serious fever. And Yeshua just simply healed him. And Yeshua didn't even have to say anything at all, but he told the guy, go home, your son is well, in order to accomplish this. Because Yeshua just did it. He just did it. Found God, but oftentimes the limit God may think of, God's just not able to handle the situation. But Yeshua handled it casually. It was it was something that, I don't know, it was like I'm turning on a light switch or turning on the TV. It was just something that just happened. It's something you almost didn't even have to think about. Just simply the power that came out to do this. So that was the first miracle. And here there was a man who believed in Yeshua's power, but didn't necessarily believe in him. And it was obvious that he believed that Yeshua was a rabbi of power and maybe even a prophet of power. But he's not quite sure until the end of that passage that he really understood something about who Yeshua was. I think by the end of that time, when it says that he himself believed in his whole household, at that point they understood who he was. Because this was... There are issues, and there are stories in Scripture, there are accounts in Scripture, even before Yeshua, of prophets healing people. There's Elijah and Elisha. There are prophets who heal people. They healed somebody's son who was sick. And maybe that's where he kind of came from to start with, is the widow going to get Elijah, who was a Shunammite. And so Elijah came to her and touched the child in order for the child to be brought back to life. So there are healings that had occurred in history that God had accomplished through his prophets, but never like this. Never that somebody 15 miles away just says, okay, it's time. And that just blew this man's mind. Chapter 5, verse 1, a different time. After these things, there was a feast of the Jews in the children of Jerusalem. We don't know what feast that was. Once again, there was some podium pounding. There's some podium pounding among the commentaries I read. Some people say it's a minor Jewish feast or festival in the middle of August called the Feast of Wood. Other people say it was the Feast of Trumpets. Other people said it was Passover. The answer is, we don't know. And you can't hitch your horse to the cart of which a particular chronology is, because we don't know, and if it were important, God would have said. And the fact that God didn't tell us means it's not important which feast it was. What happened has nothing to do with the feast, has nothing to do with the meaning of the feast. It was just something that happened coincidentally, or how should I say it, that was accompanying Yeshua's trip up to the feast. Verse 2, now there is in Jerusalem by the Sheep Gate a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porticos. So you've got to ask, it's so funny, Edersheim had a large write-up on this particular issue. Yeshua went up to Jerusalem to attend the feast. The feast celebration was at the temple. And here we had this pool of Bethesda somewhere in Jerusalem. So rather than hanging around with the grand high people around the temple, Yeshua was over in around this pool dealing with the sick and the needy. It's sort of like an example. I was actually thinking of this when we were thinking about this morning and things going wrong and whatnot. The kind of people God uses, the kind of things that God does. It's sort of like you have this master musician that wants to put together instruments for an orchestra. And nowadays when people want to put together instruments for a world-class orchestra, they go get world-class instruments. They go to the instrument vendors, they pay millions of dollars for the instruments. But God's different. God doesn't go to the world-class dealer in order to build his kingdom. He goes to the hawk shops. He goes to the pawn shops. And he finds whatever dirty, broken-down things that barely play. And he collects those together. And strangely enough, when God's hands on them, they put beautiful music together. So here we have another example of all the splendor and all the things going on in the temple. And rather than she was spending time rubbing shoulders with the rich and powerful people around the temple, here he is wandering around the city in this place that certainly didn't have rich and powerful with it. Verse 3, and these lay a multitude of those who were sick, lying, lame, and withered, waiting for the moving of the waters. For an angel of the Lord went down at certain season into the pool and stirred up the water. Whoever then first and after the stirring up the water stepped in, it was made well from whatever disease with which he was afflicted. He saw rich and powerful. These were, in those days, if you were sick or crippled, you were the lower of the low. I mean, you were just the discards of society. They didn't have nice, pleasant hospitals for you to stay in. They didn't have anything that really for your convenience. It's basically, if you couldn't take care of yourself, you're out. You're abandoned. So these people were laying around this pool. Something was going on with that pool, because later on the man, you know, was talking about getting into the pool when the waters are stirred. A bit about the estimation of the angels stirring the waters, that's probably apocryphal. That's probably something that was added later because some of the best manuscripts don't have it. There was something stirring the waters, but I don't see God using this particular method of healing people. Most likely that's what people thought was going on, because there were a lot of superstition around other pools in the Middle East in that time. They were basically underground pockets of gas that would bubble up from time to time. People ascribed all sorts of superstitious meaning to it. So I don't see that God actually did bring the angels to the water. That was the ritual that just said, yo, come back here. And then the whole pool would bubble in, but it would not get something. That is the opinion of the time. It's not necessarily what actually was happening with that pool. Verse 5. A man was there who had been ill for 38 years. 38 years. It's a long time to be ill, especially in their culture. He basically didn't have a life. His life consisted in laying about me, begging for money, sitting on a pool, waiting to get in, get healed. Verse 6. And Yeshua saw him lying there and knew that he had already been a long time in that condition. He said to him, do you wish to get well? That's an interesting question. But it's the question that when somebody's been sick for a long time, sometimes the mental attitude, they don't really want to get well. They're just so used to being sick, and being sick is such a part of their lives that they wouldn't have an identity. So, the first question you show this man is, do you want to get well? You've been sick for 38 years, do you really want to get well? The sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me into the pool when the water is stirred up, but while I'm coming, another steps down before me. Yeshua said to him, get up, pick up your pallet and walk. And it's just that easy, just that quick. And just like the earlier healing, Yeshua didn't have to explain any effort at all. He saw himself define a fix. There were no flashes of light. There was no singing of choirs. There was no long prayers. There was no speaking in that
certain voice that people talk
when they're trying to accomplish the work. No, it's fine, you're done. And verse 9, immediately the man became well and picked up his pallet and began to walk. He said, you know, get up, get going. And he was. He picks up his pallet, he does exactly what you want him to do. He got up and he walked. Now it was Shabbat on that day. Uh-oh. So the Jews were saying to the man who was cured, it is the Shabbat, and it is not permissible for you to carry your pallet. It's like, you know, you have this great big pile of gold in front of you. You're looking at it and you say, oh, that piece is dirty. I won't take it, and walk away. It's like looking at Yeshua's this huge miracle. And this man who was crippled for 38 years, and he was healed like that. It wasn't the best of it. It wasn't like you're in the process of being healed. He was crippled one moment, and the next moment, not only was he walking, but he was well enough to carry his mat. And that says something about the totality of Yeshua's healing. Nowadays, we see charlatans who call people up in crutches, and they say, you're healed, and then they painfully hobble off the stage. And that was not the character of Yeshua's miracle. When Yeshua did a miracle, those who had never walked before got up, they leapt, they jumped, they carried things. They were just completely and absolutely healed. There was no doubt whatsoever that miracle had come. That's what taken place. And nowadays, there are people who study, who look at some of these the healings, and have not found a single one. I'm not talking about, you know, these healings that God does in the quiet and stillness, but these amphitheater kind of healings, they haven't found a single one that is incontrovertibly true. People walk up with cancer, and they walk away with cancer generally. So Yeshua's ministry was not like that. When real healings and real miracles occur from God, they happen, they're complete, they're total, and they're undeniable. You look at that and say, something happened, I can't explain. I'm not saying that miracles don't occur. I'm just saying that the majority of these big theatrical things are just, it's not the way God does miracles. Miracles are acquired. If somebody has a lump, they want to do a biopsy, people pray hard for them, they go to the doctor and the lump's gone. Where'd it go? I don't know, God took it out. No lights, no special effects, no thunderous voices, no impressive things, no 100 voice choirs. I just did it. He does it. The man's healed and walks away. But yet, he didn't do it in the way that they expected it to be done. Verse 11, but he answered them, "He who made me well was the one who said to me, 'Pick up your pallet and walk.'" I have mixed feelings about this guy, and once again, look at the commentaries, I get some sense of it. Some people paint this guy as a hero, some people paint this guy as not so much a hero. I have mixed feelings about this guy, because notice he didn't say anything about, well, I just got healed, although maybe they knew that, but he immediately shifted blame. He said, well, it's not my fault, the guy who healed me told me to pick it up. So I did. First of all, they asked him, who's the man who said to you, pick up your pallet and walk? Well, the man who was healed did not know who it was. He was tucked away while there was a crowd in that place. This miracle is remarkable for a number of different things. This is one of those miracles that did not depend at all on the man's faith because he had it. He didn't even know who Yeshua was. It was a drive-by healing, if you would. Yeshua just walks by. But what's the problem? He said, I'm a couple, I can't get in the water. He said, fine, you're here, see it. And he walked off. Now you sure knew the guy came from that. I'm fine with him. Well, you were going to find the guy later. He always did after healing. He always went back to deal with the man or woman to make sure that it wasn't just the healing of their physical self, but he offered them spiritual healing as well. So he always made contact with people like this where it was he didn't know what was going on, he didn't know who he was. But it didn't depend at all on the man's faith. It didn't have it. It's something that God did. I mean, sometimes people today are equating faith with God's power. God's power is God's power. I mean, he does it in every place. You know, he talks about the gifts of the Spirit. The gifts of the Spirit are gifts. If I give it to you because you did something, it's not just anymore. It's a reward. It's a payment. The gifts of God are not a payment. They're done for the purpose of God and God's timing. Was healed, didn't know he was. Verse 14, afterward Yeshua found him in the temple and said to him, behold, you have become well, do not sin anymore so that nothing worse happens to you. I say this in comment too. We know from other places in John that not all illness and infirmity is due to sin. But yet we also know from that part in 1 Corinthians 11 that we read every month for our little Seder, that sometimes sickness is the result of sin. Sometimes God does bring into your life judgment, but it's appropriate. It's appropriate. So that you know immediately why you're getting this sickness. Sometimes we live in a sinful, fallen world. And because we live in a sinful, fallen world, stuff happens. Right? That isn't necessarily attributable to our sin. It might be attributable to this sin over here. You know, a pilot doesn't take care of himself. And so he comes on the job, he's tired, he's not alert, he flies the plane, the plane crashes. Right? And it's his sin, but other people sin before it. So in this world, there is injustice because of the fallen world. And sometimes people suffer for sin, but it's not necessarily their own sin. But sometimes people suffer for a sin that is their own. I mean, I have an idea why my voice is like it is this morning, in regards to something that I didn't do like I ought to have done. That sometimes God, when God brings judgment, that is infirmity or sin, or infirmity based that is a result of sin, you usually know it. You can tell what's going on. I mean, I've told the story before about that I had issues with my eyes and I went blind for a while. But that was always tied into it. I was in Bible a while because I dabbled back in the occult in my shipping. I knew that I was a believer, and I went back and I was dabbling in the Dungeons and Dragons and something that was very magical, very occult. And there were other things going on that there was a clear indication to me that this was more than a game and I needed to get out of it. So every time they played Dungeons and Dragons, whether I was there or not, this little group that I was with, my eyes went out. So it was very much attributable. It was a sickness. It was an infirmity that was very much traceable right back to the sin that caused it. So you'd look at it and say, I know exactly where it's coming from. So when God brings judgment on sin through sickness, you very seldom have to sit and wonder, well, is this because of my sin? It's something that is so obvious that you know that it's something that God is bringing to you, that you know exactly what's going on. So what Yeshua is saying to him, basically, well, back from that verse in the Haftar, or I'm sorry, yeah, in the Haftar, it says that if there is a judgment on the city, has not God brought it from Romans chapter 3? What Yeshua is saying to him, you notice how I had the power to heal you. Well, if I have the power to heal, I have the power to bring it on. So if you continue to sin, something worse might happen. You know what his background was. But apparently there was something going on there that Yeshua had to deal with that was above and beyond the illness that the man knew and Yeshua knew. We don't know. Verse 15, the man went away and told the Jews that it was Yeshua who had made him well. This is one of those places that I think that David Stern and the Messianic New Testament. There are a lot of things, issues I have with Messianic New Testament, but he tends to translate sometimes this word Judeans and sometimes Jews. I think this is something that Judeans is appropriate here rather than Jews, because the man who was healed was a Jew, Yeshua was a Jew, his disciples were Jews, everybody knows pretty much as the Jews or the Samaritans who were half-Jewish, that the Judeans were the people who were the ultra-Orthodox of their day. They were the people who were really observant. They were the people from, you know, the very observant part of town or the country, and they're the ones who often caused them trouble. And so they were causing them trouble. And again, in verse 16, for this reason, the Jews were persecuting Yeshua because he was doing these things on the Shabbat. And that was something that in their heads they just couldn't reconcile, because Shabbat had risen up to be the cornerstone of Judaism, and it wasn't. It wasn't supposed to be. I mean, even nowadays, there's stuff I've used in the past about doing a Friday night service, but never really went anywhere because never got any interest. I basically said, I'm not talking about you guys, because this wouldn't be with you guys, but other people who couldn't meet on Saturday morning. And so I basically set the word out, and if I would get four or five families that were interested, I said, okay, I'd get together. But I have to be really careful about Friday night service, because the Friday night service in mainstream Judaism is very much pointed towards Shabbat rather than pointing towards God. And you have to be really, really careful what you're worshiping and how you're doing it in order to do that. I mean, this whole bit about welcoming in the queen of the Shabbat and all sorts of strange stuff that goes on there it's almost idolatrous, really. And in Yeshua's day, it was just as much. So Shabbat, it was almost like we worship our God's name Shabbat rather than our God's name, that it was so much tied into all those observances. You pick up the Talmud, well, you didn't really want to pick it up unless you had a forklift, but you open up certain volumes of the Talmud, and it goes on and on and on about Shabbat. And it just, there are volumes and volumes on Shabbat and what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And it's just, come on, people, lighten up. So the fact that Yeshua did this. By the way, I believe it was Edertan, he said, and while I was reading him, that in Yeshua's day, it would have been permissible to lift the guy up and put him in the pool to be healed. In Judaism, later on, that would not have even been permissible. That would have been a violation of Shabbat laws. But even in this day, in Yeshua's day, the carrying of the mat was the thing that really ticked them off. But what was he supposed to do? Right? You can't just leave it there. That would have been his only worldly possession. He's not going to leave it there. He's not going to sit there. He's well. He's not sick. I think sometimes Yeshua did stuff too to get people to think. Oh, I think a lot of people should think so. And this was really to get the leadership to think. And they weren't thinking the right things. They were so blinded by whether he met their expectations or not that they couldn't see past that to what exactly he was trying to do. The blessing, this great wonderful blessing. Now we have to watch out for that. I mean, we pray for something and what we get isn't what we expect, but it's still a blessing. And so oftentimes we want to argue with God that what we got wasn't what we asked for. We have a problem to give us what we asked for. It's not supposed to be. So oftentimes God gives us a blessing and we're kind of stuck on it. You know, people praying for a place to live, and they wind up moving in with family, and they're thinking, well, that wasn't what I was asking for, but it turns out being a blessing to family, maybe somebody that receives the Lord because you're living with them, or maybe you're able to minister to them, that stuff happens that you never would have expected, that God can meet your needs, and we've got to kind of open our when we're doing our particular ministry, sometimes we expect God to be in the ministry at a certain time and whatnot, but it's not that way. It's not that way. I could go on and on about legalism, not only in the Jewish community, but in the Christian community nowadays. I'll spare that little tirade. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit in the adult class. But there are times when I think if Yeshua came back today and did the things that he did in his time, in our time, he would shock a great many people in the church community because he's not acting the way they expect him to act. The great power of Yeshua in accomplishing these miracles, the great compassion he had for these people, the way of his thinking that he went seeking out this one person by the pool. He didn't have to. He could have avoided that area. But he went among the people who actually needed him, rather moving among the people who were the movers and shakers, the mockers of their day. And they're all patterns we can really appreciate from him. And we can also understand his power and his ability to meet people's needs without really making much effort. I mean, it was just, he said it, or he didn't even have to say it. It just happened. And this one, he didn't tell the man, he didn't pray, he didn't say anything to get the man healed. He just said, get up, you're healed. He just announced in both these cases. He didn't actually have to speak anything in order to accomplish the miracle. He just announced it was done. He just announced it was done. The great power and the great provision of Yeshua. It's just absolutely astounding. That's right. Dear God, Father, I thank you for all the times that you have worked in our lives, and I ask your forgiveness for the times that we demanded you to accomplish things in a certain way, that we were blinded to the blessing that we were getting because we were insisting on the way the blessing should be received. Open up our eyes that we might see and understand all that you're doing around us, but more importantly, that we might be stirred up to be part of that great effort, that we might be able to glorify you and be partakers in the work of your great kingdom for the glory of our Messiah, Yeshua. Amen. For our service, once again, tomorrow. Lord of eternity, who is King, he reigned before there was any universe. In the season of his pleasure all things were created. By his name the King we call him. After all shall cease, and yet the King be feared. For he was, for he is, and he forevermore will be. He is one, and no second shares his nature, or his unique unity, beginningless and unending. All strength is his, and all majesty. He is my God, and my living redeemer. My rock, when sorrows prevail.